Welcome to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. Each week we talk about health and fitness, but nothing replaces a visit to your own primary care provider. Today we're going to be talking about lung cancer. In particular, we're going to be talking with Dr. Evan Wu. He is a medical oncologist at Hawaii Pacific Health and at the Cancer Center at the University of Hawaii. And we're talking today about what are the latest treatments and screening protocols for lung cancer. There's a lot of information out there about some new revised guidelines on who might want to consider doing a CT or a CAT scan of the lungs to see if they might have a problem going on. And there's been an expansion in the number of people who qualify. But Hawaii is one of the places that has some of the lowest rates of doing the screening lung CT scans. And certainly we want to make sure that if somebody has a problem and we catch it earlier, there is often a much greater likelihood that they're going to do better with their treatments. And that would be the goal. So thank you for joining me today in the studio, Dr. Evan Wu.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the risk factors for lung cancer. Not everybody gets it, and we are seeing some people who have no history of smoking, but there is a connection between smoking and lung cancer. What are some of the things that can put people at a higher risk of developing lung cancer?
So the main risk factor is still cigarette smoking. It accounts for about 85 to 90% of lung cancer cases in the United States. However, there are patients, especially in Hawaii, who are at high risk for lung cancer and who have never smoked. There was a study in Taiwan. It was called the TALENT study, and it was screening patients who have never smoked for lung cancer. And what they found was there was a detection rate of almost 3% for lung cancer in patients who never smoked but had a first-degree relative with lung cancer. So that could be your mother, your father, brother, sister, or child.
So I would imagine that there may be some genetic or hereditary sort of predisposition that we're finding.
Yes, based on that, although we do say that lung cancer in general is not a hereditary disease. So if you have it, we don't actually recommend screening for your children to have lung cancer as a general guideline.
I'm sure a lot of it is personalized and really depends on the specific risk factors and situations for the individual.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So let's talk about the 85 to 90% of lung cancer that's associated with smoking. There's something that we look at in medicine called PAC years. What exactly is that and why is that important?
So for PAC years, it's your quantity of cigarettes that have been smoked. So you're looking at the number of years and then the number of packs. One pack of cigarettes is 20 cigarettes. So you're looking at number of packs that you smoke per year times the number of years.
And so if you smoked one pack a day for 10 years, that's 10, quote, pack years. If you smoked two packs a day for 10 years, that's 20 pack years. And so there's some screening that we do after there was a study that was done many years ago that was looking at whether or not doing chest x-rays or CAT scans were helpful to provide earlier detection for lung cancer. And I think the final results were that there were certain populations of people that did benefit from having a CAT scan done at a fairly routine interval based on their risk factors. And that group of population of people has expanded over the last couple of years. Who qualifies for lung cancer screening right now?
Yeah, so right now there are different guidelines, but the most common guidelines are based on the U.S. Prevention Task Force. And so based on those guidelines, any person who's between the age of 50 and 80 years old who smoked at least 20 pack years, so that could be one pack a day for 20 years or 10 packs or 10 years, two packs a day, and then they have to have quit either less than 15 years ago or they currently smoke.
And the relevance of quitting less than 15 years ago, is it because if it's been over 15 years, then there may not be that increased risk any further?
That is correct, although that's the way also the study was done. So then that's how they defined it. So if they defined it as less than 10 years, then maybe it would have been 10 years, could have been 20. So
the study kind of created the cutoff, yes. And that's what we use. So now for those folks, the idea is that they do a CT scan of the lungs. Does that require any needles? Does that require any sort of special preparation? Or if you have this test recommended for you by your provider, do you just go there and have the scan? Do you have to do anything special?
So no, you do not have to do anything special. It's considered a low dose CT scan. So they try to use a lower dose of radiation than you would in a normal CT scan. We also do it without contrast. So there's no injection, no IV injection of any contrast. So it's without contrast, low dose, and you do it annually.
And it's a very quick test. It doesn't take that long.
Yes. In and out, maybe. Well, depending on how long you have to wait. But the actual test itself is less than 5 minutes, less than 2 minutes.
Okay. So if this is something that's recommended, you know, there's always the check-in time and the time that you might have to be waiting to be the next candidate to do the scan. But the actual test, pretty fast. And you mentioned you do it annually. Now, with doing a test like that, people are either given a clear, there's nothing there, we don't see anything, or maybe there's something there, it doesn't look worrisome, we're going to monitor it, or hey, there's something else we need to do. So with those groups of people, how often do you see that somebody has a finding that requires follow-up but nothing serious versus, hey, we've got to do something?
Yeah, so that's actually a little bit of a controversial question. They defined in most of the screening studies an abnormal CT scan as having a nodule less than of at least greater than or equal to 4 millimeters. Now, anything greater than equal to 4 millimeters, something like, let's say, 5 millimeters, may be too small to biopsy. So then there could be recommendations for repeat screening in 3 months, 6 months, depending on if they're high risk or not. These patients are considered high risk. There's also a little bit of controversy with the Fleischner criteria, which is how we follow up on the CT scan, how we follow up on lung nodules. There's a little bit of difference in opinion between different providers. I mean, the pulmonologists usually get the first look at the lung nodules, and then they will manage them in a type of lung nodule clinic.
Well, that's always, I mean, as a former primary care provider, it always made me feel better to know that people were actually going to be monitored in some type of setting in a clinic or in some way that they would have regular intervals of follow-up. So that, you know, if they don't happen to have that mention when they come in to see their provider and it's, you know, they're seeing their doctor for five other conditions, there's a separate place where that's going to be monitored and evaluated. So for those folks who have nodules that require further follow-up, you mentioned maybe another scan in a few months, maybe it's too small to actually do anything further about it, like do a biopsy because it's so small. Are there other tests that sometimes need to be done, other types of scans that can help figure out if it's something serious or not?
Well, I would say usually if it looks serious enough and it's greater than 1 centimeter, then the pulmonologist will usually send them off for a biopsy. And so the biopsy that the pulmonologists usually do, it's called a bronchoscopy, where they have to put a camera into the airway, look at the lung nodule, and then take a sample of it. Sometimes we also do something through interventional radiology where they take a sample of the nodule that way. Other than that, and then based on that, then we move forward with the diagnostics.
All right, I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. You're listening to The Body Show. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Evan Wu about what are some of the steps that are taking place to identify lung cancer, and what do we do if we find out that that's what's going on for those who have done scans for any reason. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Ulupono Initiative.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak here with Dr. Evan Wu. And today we're talking about lung cancer. And right before the break, we were talking a little bit about what happens if you do one of the lung cancer screening tests called a CAT scan. It just takes a couple of minutes. It is a test that you would do every year if you're in that age bracket of age 50 to 80. You had greater than 20, what we call pack year history of smoking, and you quit less than 15 years ago, or maybe you're still smoking. So if you're recommended to do that scan, and if there's some findings, there are some potential other steps that need to be taken. If it's negative, you would just follow up in a year. If it shows something, depending on what it shows, you might need to do more scans. Or in some cases, you might need to do a biopsy to figure out what's going on with that particular area of the lung. Now, there's different types of lung cancer. What are the main types of lung cancer?
So there are two types of lung cancer. We're not very creative, so we call them small cell lung cancer and non-small cell lung cancer. And the way I describe it to patients is non-small cell lung cancer is very aggressive, and small cell lung cancer is extremely aggressive. So you have bad and worse.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like that's a good answer either way, but if you get diagnosed with those, they're either the small cell or the non-small cell.
That's correct, yep.
Okay, is one more common than the other?
Yeah, so small cell lung cancer is about 15% of all lung cancers. Non-small cell lung cancer is about 85% of all lung cancers. And then within non-small cell, we have different types of what we call histology, which is how they look under the microscope and what kind of cells they originated from. So the two main types of non-small cell lung cancer are adenocarcinoma and squamous.
And so these would be in the non-small cell category, where 85% of lung cancers may be. And out of those two, is there one particular type of cancer that has a greater predominance in people who have a heavy smoking history, or really could it be either one?
Yeah, so we typically think about small cell lung cancer as very closely associated with cigarette smoking. Non-small cell lung cancer, squamous, is also very associated with cigarette smoking. And in the patients who are never smokers who develop lung cancer, we almost always see it as non-small cell lung cancer adenocarcinoma.
And out of those folks who have no history of smoking, for their type of adenocarcinoma, does it, you mentioned that, you know, you're talking about aggressive versus extremely aggressive, neither one of those being really optimal. But when you have somebody who is not a smoker, they have this adenocarcinoma as a primary cancer, does it have a tendency to be found early stage? Or since they don't have a history of smoking, maybe they're not doing these screening tests, what would be the common symptoms that would make someone come in to see their doctor to find out that they need to do more testing?
Right. So part of the premise of actually doing the talent study for screening never smokers for lung cancer is because patients who never smoke, when they develop lung cancer, they're often found in advanced stages. So usually stage 4, metastatic, when it's already spread outside the lung. And that is because there are no lung cancer screening guidelines for patients who never, for people who never smoke.
How would they be discovered? Would they be having problems that would be from the metastases elsewhere in their body? Would it be bone pain? Would it be something that was found in some other area of the body?
Right. So the symptoms will differ based on if the lung cancer is causing problems within the lung. So that can be a chronic cough that just doesn't go away. It can be shortness of breath, worsening breathing issues. It can be even sometimes you have fluid buildup around your lungs, so that can be shortness of breath as well as pain around the chest or flank area. Now, if it's outside the lungs, then it depends on where it spreads. So, for example, if it spreads to the bone, you may have bone pain. If it spreads to the brain, you can have neurological changes, so that can be changes in your mental status, dizziness, severe headaches that never go away, things like that.
So with all of those symptoms, you'd check in and see your doctor and maybe do some additional testing. And if this is the source, they may wind up finding out that it's fairly advanced because of the time and duration it took for you to develop the symptoms.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Now, for those people who have smoking-related cancers, are they often also found in advanced stages? Or have we been able to kind of move that determination to a little earlier stage with the use of lung cancer screening?
Now, I think that question would vary by state, although Hawaii has been known to have not one of the best lung cancer screening programs. So because of that, among patients who are eligible, maybe only about 15 to 20% of patients actually receive screening CT scans. And as a consequence to that, most patients, it's usually about 60 to 70% of patients are found in the local advanced or advanced stage of lung cancer.
Now, I know it sounds like sort of a basic question, but it's always better to catch something like this when it's earlier in diagnosis. There are different stages to cancer. We still use sort of a stage 1 through 4 nomenclature for a lot of cancers. What's the advantage of catching it early?
Right. So we have 4 stages in lung cancer, stage 1, 2, 3, and 4. Now, if it's stage 1 or 2, there's a possibility of doing surgery. And when you do surgery for early stage lung cancer, you have the potential for cure, for a long-term cure. Now, if it's caught in the stage 3 setting, which usually means it's spread to the lymph nodes or it's a larger tumor that could be invading into structures around where that tumor is, then it's possible to cure, but much less likely, either with surgery or a combination of chemotherapy or radiation. Stage 4 means it's spread outside the lung, and it means that it's no longer curable.
In that case, you might still do treatment for it. Just depends on the particular characteristics of that tumor.
Correct. So stage 4 is considered treatable and with the potential to stabilize the cancer, but it is not considered curable.
And so for those folks here in the islands, we're seeing that you mentioned that 60 to 70% are more advanced. That's stages 3 or 4?
Correct. At least stage 3, 4. Yeah.
And the treatment options you mentioned are fairly different. I mean, you really, if you caught it earlier, we're talking a much greater chance that you could cure it.
So surgery is still the best option if you're a surgical candidate to perform surgery with the highest potential for cure. The other option would potentially be for radiation. If it's caught early enough, it's small, and patients either are not surgical candidates or they do not want surgery.
So if anybody has this smoking history and their provider doesn't bring it up, or even if they just haven't seen their doctor in a while, if you're between the ages of 50 and 80 and you've smoked more than 20 pack years and you quit less than 15 years ago or you're still smoking, it's time to bring up, do I need to do a lung cancer screen and really kind of promote that and be proactive?
Yes, absolutely.
And if your doctor says go get one, please go get one.
Yes, and it's a very quick test you can do, yes.
It's a quick test, okay. And all the medical centers have CAT scans available to do this. You mentioned it's not a lot of radiation. The reasons why people might be reluctant, you could do it at any of the medical centers that we have. If they have a CAT scanner available, they should be able to do this test.
Yes, absolutely.
Readily available, okay. Well, now let's talk a little bit about the different types of treatment, including potentially surgery versus radiation versus chemotherapy or a combination of all of those. Surgery, you would go in and you would take out the tumor. You would take out part of the lung. Can someone live with less lung tissue? Could they live with one lung?
You can live with one lung, although it's really not optimal. But typically for early stage lung cancer, they try to remove one lobe of the lung. So they'll try to remove one part of one side of the lung. So they try to leave as much lung as possible for you.
Okay, so if you needed to have surgery and you needed to have part of that lung taken out, you could still do relatively well. When we're talking about radiation would be targeted just to the area where you would have the tumor or any potential spread of that tumor.
Yes, that's correct. So if you have very early stage lung cancer, you can potentially do very local radiation to the tumor itself. If it's spread to the lymph nodes, which we call either locally advanced or stage 3, then you might need a combination of chemotherapy with radiation. And the radiation would be a longer course, and it would also be more radiation than if you just had a very small spot.
Another reason to make sure if you need to be screened that you get that done. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. You're listening to The Body Show. I have Dr. Evan Wu here in the studio with me. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the different types of chemotherapy and some of the new advances in immunotherapy, which has really been able to help folks live much longer than previous whenever they get diagnosed with a tumor for which they may have a benefit for this type of treatment. We'll be right back after this quick break. Stay with us.
Support for The Body Show comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Honolulu Waldorf School and Noheia Gallery.
Welcome back to The Body Show. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak, and I'm here with Dr. Evan Wu. He is a medical oncologist specializing in lung cancer at Hawaii Pacific Health and also at the Cancer Center run through the University of Hawaii. And today we're talking about lung cancer, and we're talking about what are some of the reasons why getting screened early would be an excellent plan if you're a candidate, and also what the differences are in the treatment options depending on if you get this cancer, and if you do, what stage it might have been found at. Right before the break, we were talking a little bit about different types of radiation and surgery and the rationale for doing those. Let's spend a few moments talking about chemotherapy, because chemotherapy and immunotherapy and some of the other targeted types of treatments have really expanded in the last 10 or 15 years and have given a lot of people quite a bit of hope.
Yes, absolutely. So as a medical oncologist, we typically have three different kinds of cancer treatments to offer patients. So we have chemotherapy, which I describe as poison to your cells. So it kills off your healthy cells, but it also preferentially kills off the cancer cells. And so that's the typical one that people think about when you can possibly lose your hair. You can have nausea, vomiting, different kinds of GI side effects, and you can feel very tired. Then a new type of treatment is called immunotherapy. Now, immunotherapy for lung cancer specifically is we use a thing called immune checkpoint inhibitors. So these are ways that you can use your own body's immune system cells, specifically these T cells, to identify and kill the cancer. It's given through an IV injection, usually every 3 to 4 weeks. Now, the third type of lung cancer treatment that medical oncologists offer is something called targeted therapy. And so that's when we do molecular testing. So we look at the genetics of the lung cancer itself, and we try to identify the mutations that caused your lung cancer. And based on the mutation, if there happens to be a targeted therapy, oftentimes a pill that matches with that mutation, then we can offer that treatment. And most of the time, it's more effective and also more tolerable than chemotherapy and even immunotherapy.
How long have we had these sort of genetic types of targeted therapies? Are they the latest and newest type of treatment available?
Right. So the landscape with immunotherapy and targeted therapy are both less than 15 years, 10 to 15 years, although they keep changing every year. So every year we have at least 3 or 4 different medications coming out.
Are they sort of additional medicines with a different mechanism of action, or how are the newer treatments different from what might have been out there even 5 years ago?
Right. So for lung cancer, for targeted therapies, we do the genetic testing and we look for different kinds of drivers of your cancer. So these are genetic drivers of your cancer. And every year we're trying to figure out more and more different ways to target some of those drivers. So maybe 10 years ago, we could only target 3 or 4. Then 5 years ago, we could target 7 or 8. Now we can target at least 10 to 12.
All with one treatment, or are
these
12
are all
different treatments?
Different medications for each molecular profile.
Would you ever be in a situation where you would have someone who qualifies to do some of the targeted therapies, some of the genetic therapies, and starts on that, and then maybe develops a resistance and has to try a different one? And would that ever be something where they kind of have now potentially up to 12 different treatment options based on whatever the molecular genetics are of their tumor?
Right. So it's very important to understand that the genetics of your cancer can change over time based on the treatment. So it is very possible for one treatment to work on your cancer at a certain time point, especially in the beginning. And as you start taking a treatment, you can develop a resistance mechanism to that targeted therapy. And because of that, part of the University of Hawaii Cancer Center's plan is we want to open a lot of lung cancer clinical trials in order to target some of these resistance mechanisms. Because what happens is these resistance mechanisms might still be in research development. So not all these newer drugs are out there on the market. They're not FDA approved. They're not able to be given to patients in a regular clinic, but they are available on a research study.
And so finding out from your provider if there's clinical trials available is another step. So if you do get this diagnosis, being referred to a medical oncologist is something that pretty much almost always happens when somebody gets diagnosed with lung cancer. And then talking with the medical oncologist about clinical trial availability, if it's appropriate for you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, your medical oncologist is somebody who, similar to your primary care provider, is somebody you'll see throughout your entire cancer journey. And so as your cancer journey changes, if one cancer medicine doesn't work, then you have the discussion about what's the new treatment, what else can you do? And sometimes clinical trials will be the best option for you at that point.
Do we ever see that people are recommended to do targeted therapies or genetic treatments before they do other types of immunotherapy or chemotherapy? Or is there a specific algorithm to how we approach those three different types of treatments?
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated, but you have the three categories of treatment. And if you have a good targeted therapy option, now that can vary a little bit based on your cancer type, but for lung cancer, there are certain cancer types that we know respond very well to targeted therapy. So if you have that targeted therapy option, usually it's a pill, you would skip the chemotherapy, skip the immunotherapy, and you would take the pill only. For other types of lung cancer, primarily associated with cigarette smoking, we usually use a combination of chemotherapy and immunotherapy in the stage 4 advanced setting.
Because at that point, you may need to have that two-pronged approach. And also, because it's spread, you have to give the type of treatment that could get to the whole body.
Yes. So at that point, you're not able to kill every last cancer cell, but you do want to give medicine systemically, which is what these medical oncology treatments do. So they attack cancer throughout the entire body rather than something local such as radiation or surgery.
Sure, because if the tumor's in your lungs, but unfortunately it's spread to your brain or it's spread to your bones, only treating the lungs isn't going to treat those other areas. You need something that will get to the whole body.
That's correct, yes.
Is there ever a situation where you need to do chemotherapy and radiation together?
Yes, so if you have... We have something called concurrent chemotherapy and radiation. Now, that's in the stage 3 locally advanced setting if a cancer is in the lungs, but it's too large or too invasive for surgery, then you may do chemotherapy and radiation. The other possibility is with limited stage small cell lung cancer. We didn't talk too much about small cell lung cancer, but I did mention it was extremely aggressive. And so it does spread very fast, and it grows very fast, and it also can metastasize or spread to different places. So because of that, we give very aggressive chemotherapy. And if the patient still has disease that hasn't spread outside the lung, they will also do radiation in that setting as well.
Well, there's a lot that has changed in the last 10, 15 years in the treatment of lung cancer. One of the things that we started early in the show is to discuss some of the risk factors. We know that smoking is a risk factor for 85 to 90% of cancers. We know that there are groups of people who really would qualify to do some of the lung cancer screening testing. And if they are still smoking, obviously, you know, stop smoking and use whatever resources you can to help you to do that. If someone were to be diagnosed and they were to talk with their medical oncologist, how would they find out about clinical trials?
Yeah, so clinical trials, there is a website called clinicaltrials.gov. Now that is listing every single clinical trial that's registered, which should be every single clinical trial that's available. And the medical oncologist, especially if they are available, they might have some clinical trials of their own at their institution. And if not, they may be able to refer. Now, one of the toughest parts is we have to get more clinical trials in the state of Hawaii so our patients don't have to travel.
All right. Well, that's certainly a goal. I want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. That's Dr. Evan Wu from Hawaii Pacific Health and the University of Hawaii Cancer Center. If you'd like to hear this show again, you can click on our podcast at hpr.org and follow the links. You can also find us on the app. Our engineer is David Chong. I'm Dr. Kathleen Kozak. We'll be right here next week, right here on The Body Show. See you then.